Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection with Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide during their anniversary sale. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at OmahaSteaks.com today. They're America's original butcher, and only Omaha Steaks delivers a full lineup of extra-age steaks so tender, they're USDA certified tender. Their customer favorite filet mignon has even been elevated to USDA certified very tender. And that attention to quality doesn't just stop with steaks. We're talking beefy burgers, air-chilled chicken, premium pork, and so much more. And every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Shop now to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the anniversary sale at OmahaSteaks.com. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at checkout. That's OmahaSteaks.com, code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Merkel Media.
I'm exhausted, looking for everything in the shadows. Start looking at people like they don't matter. I'm waking up to the fact, more than a little bit shallow. I'm lost and this hole, but I don't wanna. I'm lost and this hole, 'cause I'm just trying.
What's good, everybody? This is Joel Thomas, and the day is finally here. My new podcast, Free the Rabbits, from Merkel Media, is now live and in your ear holes. Yeah. Anyway, I am glad to be with you guys, and I'll be completely honest with you. Several months ago, I didn't know if I wanted to be with you guys. And it's not because that I don't enjoy doing research, which I'm going to do anyway. It's not that I don't enjoy getting on the microphone. I love to talk. I could probably talk myself to sleep sometimes in reality. But the truth of the matter is, I wasn't sure exactly how I wanted to do podcasting going forward. And the more I thought about it, it seemed like a heavy task for what I wanted to do with podcasting going forward. Because, listen, I've been a part of the conspiracy community for before it was ever called a community. Let's just say that. I was always interested in conspiracies. I was always interested in Bigfoot, Dogman, werewolves, UFOs. I remember watching Unsolved Mysteries as a kid, and the UFO episodes were always my favorite ones. And I always get freaked out at night when I get in bed. You know, I could hear the music, dun, 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 you know. And I used to freak out if the moonlight was shining through a window upstairs in my grandparents' house, because we lived in the mountains on a mountain, and I always thought that UFOs would have an easier time getting me while I lived on a mountain. That might be true, actually, if we think they come from outer space, but if they're interdimensional, it's a possibility they could have got me anywhere. So, but anyway, I've always been interested in conspiracy theories, and I never really thought much about it. My parents were always critical thinkers, and they encouraged my sister and I to be critical thinkers. So I didn't really think anything about Bigfoot and all that. I just kind of thought that it was very possible they existed. I know as I got older, I dug into other conspiracies deeper, right? You know, 9/11 happened. That's when a lot of people started questioning things. I know the older generation will probably point to JFK and his assassination as a spinning moment in time where they stopped and said, you know, something doesn't add up. Maybe there's more to this, right? And I think that's what most people have done with certain points of their lives. Something happened big, and it shook them to their foundation to where they were like, you know what? I don't know if everything that people in charge are telling us is necessarily true. I don't know if I ever really thought about it that way, because I think growing up, I had a healthy distrust for people with power and money. And I think most people should, because generally speaking, people that get to a place of power and a lot of money probably did some underhanded things to get there. And they probably wouldn't think twice to do those things again. And I think that's where, growing up, I never really thought much about it. Now, I will say this. I'm not going to go into my whole past here on this podcast. I know a lot of people came over to listen to this podcast because they've heard my story over the past 3 years. When I was on The Confessionals 3 years ago now, I did an episode called The Devil's in the Music. And I talked about my past, where I got deep into the occult as I got older. I wanted to join a secret society, which I ended up doing. A lot of these things that happened to me that were because of conspiracies is the reason why I went that route. So I was always open to these ways of thinking. I remember my 20s watching moon landings or fake videos. I remember looking at Zeitgeist and what happened at 9/11. All these different things were a big part of my daily lexicon. But again, I didn't really think about what those things meant as a whole, outside of the fact at the time I was trying to roll with the side of manipulation. So for me, I just looked at people as cattle, sheep, what I considered them to be, the people that couldn't see the truth, and I wanted to herd them around. It, for me, it was more about power and knowledge and the essence of being able to control something that at the time was uncontrollable for me. I think that is a big allure for joining the for lack of a better word, and to borrow something from my Star Wars days, which I am a huge Star Wars fan, the dark side, right? Joining the dark side means that you have some level of control, or at least you think you have some level of control of what's happening to everyone around you, because you know what it is that's making it happen. You're a part of that, and you have some level of safety in knowing that all this bad stuff happening, I'm in control of that, and it's not happening to me. Now, that's not necessarily true, and throughout this podcast, we may do episodes where we'll talk about certain key figures in politics or certain key figures in the entertainment world and how they did rise to the top, but there's always some sort of fall, right? There's generally a massive fall or something bad happening. It's a payoff. There's a trade-off there. And I think there is some of that that's true. So conspiracies have always been a big thing for me. And it was a natural progression once 2020 hit. And we don't need to rehash those days because we all kind of know what happened with a lot of people. They quote unquote, and I am going to say quote unquote, because I do think that there's a level of it not being true, but quote unquote woke up during that time. They saw some things didn't add up and they decided to go down the rabbit hole. Now, I'm going to say for good or bad, because I watched over the last 4 years some really good things, but also some really bad things. And I think that hate saying this word, this buzzword, but I'm going to because people know what it means. The truther community became its own worst enemy. There were people waking up, but at the same time, there were probably controlled opposition involved as well. I mean, that's with anything, right? But then there's also these echo chambers of people who just fought each other. And maybe that had some to do with controlled opposition, but not all the time. People are people, and people are tribalistic by nature. We all are. I am. For me to not be tribalistic on a certain topic or a certain thing, I literally have to take my emotions out of it, because emotions are what control people. And that's when you look at religion, when you look at politics, when you look at anything that's a part of a person's belief system, they get so wrapped up in it, it becomes their identity. You can see this in this truther community. There are certain conspiracies that literally become someone's entire life, to the point that if you suggest that their theory has flaws in it, or their theory might not be true or partially true, they take massive offense to it, because now you're offending how they believe. Christians are really bad at that. I'm actually a Christian, and people that follow me over here may know that. If you don't know that, I am. Now, I'm going to preface it with, I wasn't always walking this path. I went down a long, dark path where I tried all the other stuff. So when people say that, oh, you're just one of those Christians, you grew up in the church and you don't know anything else, once you look into everything else and it gets deeper, then you know what's going on. You know that religion's controlled. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think religion is controlled, but I don't think that a relationship is controllable, if you get my drift there. It's not. So if I have a relationship with the Creator, that's vastly different than a structural religion that is perpetrated from people who want to herd us around using that as a tool too. And this can happen in any type of religion. I just use Christianity as an example. So for me, seeing that and watching everyone basically fight it out, duke it out for the past 4 years, I'm not even talking about these quote unquote normies that don't believe in conspiracy theories, don't look into anything else outside of the mainstream media, or just kind of go through life doing the things that they've been taught to do. And some of those people are actually a lot happier than the rest of us, because they're blissfully happy. You know, they're very unaware of what's going on around them. And maybe that's for the best for some of these people, to be honest with you, because they're probably living a lot happier than the rest of us. And that was also a catalyst for me to get to where I am now and why I want to do this podcast. Because all I've been seeing in this community is fighting over everything. And some of these topics I'm definitely going to do massive deep dives in throughout the course of this podcast. But you've got big overarching theories and people argue and fight over what those are. And they don't stop. And it is, social media has made it a hotbed for echo chambers. Now, if you don't know, a lot of the people that you may be fighting with online aren't actually people. They're bots. As a matter of fact, there's been test studies done over the past 15 years that there's upwards to 60% to 70% of comments and likes that are actually bots. And we're not talking about people that pay for bots. We're talking about just bots that are out there that are commenting with you that are evolving with AI, and you think you're arguing with the person, you're actually arguing with a bot, which is... It's pretty crazy to think that there are some people that will argue with a bot for 3 weeks and not even know it. But this is what this community's turned into. And I wanted to do a podcast where I'm encouraging people to look into topics. Let's have fun looking into these topics. There could be some of these topics that you incorporate into your belief system that you like, that you're like, you know what? I like that. I believe that. That's something I'm going to hold true to me now until proven otherwise. There's plenty of topics that I thought about 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, 10 years ago, that I think vastly different now. The Book of Enoch's one of them. You may have heard Nephilim Portal Babies. I suggested on that podcast that the entire Book of Enoch was written by Evil Enoch, which was Cain's son. I don't really think that now. I do think some of it very possibly was, but I do think that there is good evidence that the good Enoch, which was seventh generation on Seth's side, Adam's side, that he wrote at least some of it. I do think that the book is a little weird at times as far as being overly indulgent towards angel kind, and I think maybe that's where Evil Enoch came into play. But again, I'm very open to understanding things further and understanding that, hey, I could have a thought pattern that is one way, but I can always change it with new information or if I'm revealed something later. And that's what I try to do. I try not to hold too dear to certain things. You know, people that follow me over here know I love Nephilim. I love talking about Nephilim. And Nephilim is another one. I have definitely vastly changed how I thought about Nephilim over the years to I thought they were just an evil thing because it was created from an evil place. But I've now come to the realization that I think there were good Nephilim, and you've probably heard good Nephilim on several podcasts, not just the confessionals where I've done some deep dives into it, which I will do on this show too. I'll do some even deeper dives on what some of that could have meant in biblical times. But again, this is just me talking about how I can change course by looking at new information. And I hope through this podcast, the point of it is, it's called Free the Rabbits. It's to get your tail, your rabbit tail, out the hole. You need to go outside, touch grass, like the normies say. They're not wrong about that. Touch grass. Look at the sky, look at the sun, talk to your neighbor. Talk to that neighbor that doesn't believe in conspiracies and have a legitimate conversation with them where you don't get rubbed the wrong way because they believe something different or they don't know as much as you do. Matter of fact, the thing you think you know as much or more than them, you might be completely wrong about. That's the best part. People are ready to fight over theories. Theories. The truther world is probably the most toxic community on the planet. And I mean it. There are communities in every sector, right? Sports, any kind of entertainment. People are always fighting. The social media has made it that way. Matter of fact, posts get more engagement the more people argue. They're built for that. It's called rage baiting. You put something out there that you know is going to be controversial. People are going to rage bait, drives the numbers up. Same thing in the truther community. People argue and fight all the time. I've never seen anything like it. But I think I rail on this community, and I don't even like calling it a community again. A community is not a group of people that fight all the time. And that's all that's done in this community. That's all it is people arguing and fighting over theories. And that got me to a point, and this, I'm reeling it back in a little bit, got me to a point where I considered walking away from this because I didn't know if I wanted to contribute to that anymore. And I thought about it over the last 6-7 months about what I wanted to do with this. I talked to Tony about it, and I came to a place, you know, after a lot of prayer and a lot of, you know, self-reflection of what I wanted to do with it. And I realized that I did want to do it, but I wanted to do it my way. I wanted to do it where I'm looking into these topics. I'm giving you information that I've researched and you can glean from it what you want to. I'm not here to argue. I'm not here to debate with anybody. I'm not. Write me a 100-page email. Probably not going to read it. Just letting you know that right now. I am all for people giving me information and me looking into things, but I also have to follow my path. And I'm not here to cater to anybody, but I'm also not here to start up arguments, start up a bunch of strife. It's going to happen naturally. I'm sure I'm going to say something that's going to rub someone the wrong way. That's just part of life. Not everybody's going to like me. And I've come to that realization too, that no matter how great of a person I strive to be, even to other people, that not everybody's going to like you. Sometimes it's just a personality clash. You just don't get along with somebody. Like, I don't like that dude's face. I've had people say that about me. Like, okay, like, I get it. Maybe I just, you know, rub you the wrong way. Maybe you got that. What's that disease that they're saying is a disease where somebody looks at you and you look like a demon? Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe you're looking at me. I'm like a ginger demonoid when you look at me. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just being funny. But I don't want to contribute to that knowingly. That's not where I want to go with this. You know, I just want to present information and let people do with what they want with it. And I think that today we're going to talk about a topic that I think is going to be the basis for this podcast. Now, I've talked about this subject before, but I've never gone this in depth with it. And I think it's important because it's a topic matter that most people don't know about. And the few people that do, they haven't looked into it that deeply. They don't understand it. And I think that it's important for us to look into this particular topic. Now, it's all centered around one guy, actually two, but one particular guy because he worked for the Obama administration. And when he was signed up for the Obama administration, this is when this spike of activity that I'm going to talk about happened. And this is when the birth, I'll say, of the truther movement, truther community came out of. And I believe that the current truther community has been infiltrated, if not created, by government entities. And I don't think it's that hard to see that, but I think that it would be very difficult for people to accept that. And I think that that's why that people who dig into conspiracy theories, who try to dig for the truth, have a very difficult time talking to someone they would consider a normie. That should never be a problem for anyone that's a critical thinker. You should never not be able to talk to someone who thinks differently than you. Matter of fact, you should be able to find a multitude of other topics besides, you know, I don't think Al-Qaeda took down the towers. That shouldn't be the first thing out of your mouth. The first thing out of your mouth shouldn't be arguing to some quote-unquote normie about the shape of the earth. These things don't matter. What matters is our connectability to God and how we connect that to someone else. First and foremost is showing love and compassion to people. Even people, when we look at them, who we're like, I don't know if I have enough love and compassion for that person. That's when you dig deeper and you actually do that. And that's something I've been doing the past 6-7 months, really just trying to hone in on what I can do to help others, not the truther community. I'm not here for you. And I want to be blatantly honest with that. I'm not here for you. Not in this world. I am here for people that need help. Our goal on these podcasts are not to convince anybody of anything. I'm just here to give you my truth or my take on topics and let you take it wherever you want to run with it. My job's not to convince you. Our job should not be to wake people up. I really hate that phrase. I'm here to wake people up. That's why I'm stirring the pot. That's why I'm arguing with people online all the time. They need to see the truth, because if they don't, they're going to hell. That's not how you reach people. You reach people with love and compassion, and you show them a side that they haven't seen from anybody else, because most of the world is full of people screaming and yelling at each other. That's not what we're here to do. It's not. And I've learned that so much now, and I'm still learning it. I'm still learning on how I can reach the community. You know, ask yourself this question. I know I'm going to jump off topic before I get into the meat of this. What are you doing to help your community? People talk about fighting the system. What are you doing to help your community? Well, I don't have time. I'm working 12 hours a day. I got 4 kids. I get that. But look at your time management. What else are you doing? Well, I need to blow steam off. I worked a 10-hour day, 10-hour shift. I need to blow steam off, though. Do you? Do you? That's another thing in the conspiratorial community, too. Excuses. Conspiracy theories become excuses for why you can't achieve success, why you can't save your marriage, why you can't connect to your neighbor. Because the big bad big brother is stopping me. You know, I've heard every excuse under the book from people why they can't be successful. It's mind-blowing to me. And listen, this is coming from a person who thought like that for a long time, that the algorithm was holding me down from being successful. Now, I have a belief in God, and I believe that God supersedes that. If you don't have a belief in God, you can at least believe in yourself, that you can get yourself to a place of success by not living in a perpetual state of despair, a perpetual black pill, to where you feel like that it's over. Once you get to that state of mind, you're done. You've given up. Because now you've got every finger point to everything else of why you can't be successful. Listen, I'm not here to tell you that there aren't things going on in the world that make it difficult for us. Oh, absolutely. There are bad things that happen to good people, and I'm not saying that. I won't disavow the things that I know that are going on behind the scenes, or at least the things I suspect with the information that I see that are going on behind the scenes. I'm not here to tell you that those things aren't going on. What I'm here to tell you is, don't let those things control you. Don't let them stop you from your God-given path. Your God-given path of success. You don't have to. You don't have to do it. And that is why I feel just so strongly to do this podcast, because I want to encourage people to have fun looking into these topics, know that there are things on the horizon, always be aware, always keep yourself ready, but at the same time, live life and be happy. Listen, everything that happens in life to you is not going to make you happy, but you can live a joyful life. You can connect to people, and by helping others, you'll live a fulfilled life. Again, back to, what are you doing in your community? Do you have a few hours a week that you can give to the local soup kitchen? Do you have a couple hours a week you can help with your local community center? Anything. Because that, guys, is how you fight the system. By bringing people together, not waking people up by screaming and yelling at them about how the government gonna take them down. Anyway, I'm going to get to the main bulk of this podcast, and I know we veered off here for about 25 minutes, but I think it's important because for me, this is what the podcast is going to be going forward, and I'm going to talk about a multitude of different topics. If you like one thing from me, don't get too comfortable with that because I'm not going to just talk about that thing. So if you came over here to hear me talk about Nephilim and Giants 24/7, that won't happen. That will happen in the course of conversation because I like talking about it. It may be sprinkled in here and there, and I may do, and no, there won't be may. I will be doing some full episodes, many, I'm sure, about Giants and Nephilim and how they connect to a lot of things going on in the world because I love the topic and I think there's a lot of validity to it. But at the end of the day, I'm here to talk about a multitude of different things and how the inner workings go on with government structures, things that go into entertainment. I want to talk about the occult. We're going to get into biblical things. We'll get into Sumerian lore. We'll get into Greek lore. We'll get into Roman lore. We'll get into all of these different things as I see fit, as I go along. You know, it may be a week where I see something hot and I'm like, you know, I'm going to talk about that. So that's how this podcast is going to roll. And I hope that you're going to enjoy it. But back to this interesting basis for what this podcast is going to talk about. And I want to call this the Cass Sunstein effect. And we're going to talk a little bit about who Cass Sunstein is. We're going to talk about his co-writer on this particular paper that I'm going to talk about today. I believe, this is my belief because of the research that I've done, that this particular paper was the basis for the majority of the conspiracy theories that have hit the internet post-2008 and cruising into 2016 when they really hit their ride and then really into 2020 and beyond. I believe this paper set the groundwork behind the scenes of what the government wanted to do with the truther community. Even before it was called that, this is their plan for it. And it also will help open our eyes to seeing that these theories that we're willing to die on a hill, on a sword for, maybe aren't to be done so that way. Maybe we don't need to be living our life for a theory. Maybe we don't need to be calling our first name the shape of the earth. I know that's going to rub some people the wrong way, but it's true. If your entire reason to live is over a theory, then you need to rethink how that you are connecting to people and living life fully, not living in this matrix, literally a matrix, a computer matrix that you're living in, looking at these screens all day, looking at the computer screen in front of you all day, never getting out of the rabbit hole. You got to live life and you got to live it full. The best thing about Christians is, and also, well, really the worst thing is the fact that they're always screaming about going to heaven. I can't wait to get to heaven because it's really bad down here. You've heard me say this on other podcasts, and I'm going to say it again. Heaven wasn't created for you. It wasn't. Earth was created for you. You were told to be a steward of this earth. I don't care how bad it looks. You are supposed to be a steward. You are supposed to reach out to other people, connect to other people with love and compassion, and that's how you fight the system. It's not living life in fear and waiting to go home. Oh, I can't wait to go home. Home to heaven. Oh, I've heard it just like that before. You're living a lie. That's not why we're supposed to be here. It's not. That I can tell you is not a theory. That's a fact. And again, the purpose of this podcast is to get you to want to live life fully. If you're already living life fully, cool. You got words of encouragement coming every week. If you're not, one or two things are going to happen. It's going to rub you the wrong way. And you won't listen to me anymore. Or you're going to be like, you know what? Maybe I do need to get out of this rabbit hole. Maybe I do need to touch grass, put my feet on it. Be thankful for my family, what family I have left or what family that I've helped create. What family I may have in the future. People I may connect to that become my family. All of these things, that's at the core root of what they don't want. So all these theories causing us to argue and fight each other is not that. Back on that tangent again. But I think it's needed here on this first episode because I think that's going to set the tone going forward. So Cass Sunstein, he is an American legal scholar. He's known for his work in constitutional law, administrative law, environmental law, and behavioral economics. The behavioral economics is very important because he knows all about it, especially being in law. And he's written several books that have to do with the behaviors of people, how to manipulate people's behavior, how to manipulate people to do what you want them to do. He wrote a couple of New York Times bestsellers, The World According to Star Wars, which he talks about people's behaviors and how it ties into the Star Wars universe. And he also wrote Nudge in 2008. And we will talk about Nudge and the Nudge theory here in a little bit because it does have to do with this paper that he wrote about conspiracy theories, which I think the modern truther community is actually the foundation of this paper. Again, back to, I think that the government had a big hand in creating this truther community and herding it around because I do not think that it's a bunch of free thinkers out here spreading information freely. I just don't think that. I don't think they would allow that. And I think some of your favorite conspiracy theories are well manipulated and have been for a long time. Cass Sunstein was also the administrator of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs in the Obama administration from 2009 to 2012. This is very important because he writes this paper in 2008 with the book Nudge in 2008. He goes into the Obama administration. This paper I will be talking about shortly was controversial. There were a lot of people that liked it, especially people in power. There were other people on the opposite end of the spectrum that were also in law that didn't like it as much because they could see where there was the undertones of manipulation. And I will break down some of the paper today where you'll understand that there are some great ideas out of the paper. And Cass Sunstein and Vermeule, who's the other writer, they're not wrong about some of the stuff they're saying in this paper. The way they talk about some conspiracy theorists, they aren't wrong. And that I think that's what makes the paper so compelling is when they finish it with their idea of what to do with a conspiracy theory community, it makes sense. If you're not a part of a critical thinking community and you can look at it objectively, it looks good. And from somebody who does critically think, I think a lot of it is good. And I know that would be controversial to say too, especially within people who consider themselves truthers or critical thinkers. Like, you would agree with something that is manipulative. I'm not agreeing with the manipulation part, but I'm agreeing with how they look at people and how that people think. This guy studies behavior. He understands how people operate. So Cass Sunstein, after law school, he ends up working for Justice Thurgood Marshall. If you know, he was part of the U.S. Supreme Court from 1979 to 1980. He did some clerkships. He gets into programs on risk regulation when he joins the faculty at Harvard Law School, and he became the director of that. So he starts breaking down the programs on risk regulation, and they focus on how law and policy deal with the central hazards of the 21st century. So his job is to anticipate things like terrorism, climate change, occupational safety, infectious diseases, natural disasters, other low probability, high consequence events. That's very important. Because every single one of those things I just named off are what? Big topics in the truth or conspiratorial community. Every single one of those things I just named off. Terrorism, you know, climate change is argued to death. Occupational safety, infectious diseases, we don't even need to go there. Natural disasters, that's another one. You know, heart, however you want to take it. That was his job at Harvard, was to look into those particular things. Also, part of that risk regulation, he developed this concept of availability cascades. Basically, it's a discussion. The idea is self-feeding. So when people have ideas, it's self-feeding and it causes individuals to overweigh the importance to where the idea becomes bigger than the actual truth. The reason why I brought up the cascades is because cascades are a huge part of this particular paper. So when we get to the paper, I will talk about the cascades and how he talks about the conspiracy theorists get caught up in cascades that they create as ideas that overweigh the actual truth. And this is kind of where it started for him, was working in this particular sector. So in 2009, he co-authors Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness. In 2008, with economist Richard Thaler of the University of Chicago. Now, Nudge discusses how public and private organizations can help people make better choices in their daily lives. So, one of the statements that Sunstein and Thaler make is people often make poor choices and look back at them with bafflement. We do this because as human beings, we are all susceptible to a wide array of routine biases that can lead to an equally wide array of embarrassing blunders in education, personal finance, healthcare, mortgages, credit cards, happiness, and even the planet itself. So, not wrong with that. People do make bad choices. People look back at them with bafflement. They don't know what to do. That is the setup. So, the nudge is this. A nudge, as we will use the term, is any aspect of the choice architecture that alters people's behavior in a predictable way without forbidding any options or significantly changing their economic incentives. To count as a mere nudge, the intervention must be easy and cheap to avoid. Nudges are not mandates. Putting fruit at eye level counts as a nudge. Banning junk food does not. So you see what they're using here? It's called nudge theory. They're going to nudge you in the way that they think you should go because you don't know what's good enough for yourself. Now, to his point, there are a lot of people out there making dumb decisions. A lot of people that don't critically think. And to his point, these sheep need to be herded around. I don't know if he's necessarily wrong from his angle in how he thinks about that. He's not. Now, I don't think that way because I don't look at people as sheep and cattle. And I think people need the right to think for themselves and the ability to do so. But in his statement, this nudge, like he said, we don't want you to eat junk food. So we're going to put the fruit at eye level where you can see it. You're going to want it. We'll may even say some nice things about it to push you, to nudge you in that way. Now, he used that as an example, which I think it's funny that he used a healthy choice as an example, which I honestly feel like it would be the opposite, right? It would be the junk food that they would be putting at eye level and nudging you away from the fruit. But he just used that as an example, and that's true. There are a lot of structures in place, not just government, but companies that want to nudge you into buying their product. Look at all the algorithms that you see on Instagram, X, YouTube, even Spotify, Apple, all of these different places in these ads, they're nudging you into what they want you to consume. That's what he's talking about. But he's saying it at a bigger scale that governments can do this. So now we have Adrian Vermeule. Full name is Cornelius Adrian Comstock Vermeule, which is a beast name. That is, you name your kid that, he better be successful. That kid better be everything that this Adrian Vermeule ended up being. He's an American legal scholar who also graduated from Harvard Law School. He's an expert on constitutional and administrative law, and since 2016 has voiced support for Catholic integralism, which I'm going to talk about for a minute too, because I think that's important before we jump to the paper. He's articulated this into the theory of common good constitutionalism. So his idea of this Catholic world government, no lie, that's what integralism is. He was a convert to Catholicism. He became an advocate of integralism, a form of modern legal and political thought originating in historically Catholic-dominant societies and opposed to the Founding Fathers' ideal of division between church and state. Integralism in practice gives rise to state order, in which a religiously conceived highest good has precedence over individual autonomy, the value prioritized by American democracy. So he wants to go back to the days when the Catholic Church ran everything with the governments. That's what he wants to do. That's what integralism is. He said he is opposed to the Founding Fathers and their idea of what that means, which I just think is insane. But at the end of the day, it gives you a deeper look into who Vermeule is going into this paper that we're about to look into. Also, Vermeule, in February of 2020, he compared attendees of a conservative conference to concentration camp detainees, calling them the very first group for the camps. So he is saying that he's clearly not a conservative at all, but he's saying that people at the conservative conferences will be the first ones up. The first ones up for concentration camps back in the Holocaust, which is purely just nuts. And he did get a little backlash from that, but not enough, in my opinion. So just very, very interesting stuff. So we've got Cass Sunstein from Harvard University. We have Adrian Vermeule, also from Harvard University. Both studied law there. Both have New York bestsellers. Tons of papers written. Matter of fact, Sunstein and Vermeule are both ranked as the highest percentage of papers written that are looked up by law students currently, which is insane. So they are at the top of the game even now when it comes to what they have to say about governments and law. So they write this book, this paper. It's not a book, and it was published in 2009, Symposium on Conspiracy Theories, Conspiracy Theories, Causes, and Cures. So it's kind of got the two-name thing going on there, Symposium on Conspiracy Theories. Then you got Conspiracy Theories, Causes, and Cures. That's the name of it. I will have a link at the bottom you can get to. It's a PDF. You can download it. It doesn't take but maybe 30, 40 minutes to read. It's a paper, but it's chock full of ideas and interesting things we'll talk about today. They started out with the classic X-Files phrase, the truth is out there. Conspiracy theories are all around us. Now, they start with some polls that are done in the early 2000s. And again, this was written in 2009. So this is, again, what I think is the basis for what the truther community has become now. In August 2004, a poll by Zogby International showed that 49% of New York City residents thought that the attacks at 9/11 were planned in advance, and either the U.S. government knew about them and didn't stop it, or the U.S. government was a part of it. So that's, we're talking almost half of New York City in 2004 thought that the government had something shady to do with this. He starts breaking it down, even what Canadians thought. You know, 78% of Canadians thought that the U.S. government had something to do with this. And then massive amounts when you get into Muslim countries and Arabs, it was even higher. Pretty wild stuff. And they asked the question, what causes such theories to arise and spread? Are they important and perhaps even threatening, or merely trivial and even amusing? What can and should government do about them? We aim here to sketch some psychological and social mechanisms that produce, sustain, and spread these theories to show that some of them are quite important and should be taken seriously, and to offer suggestions for government responses, both as a matter of policy and as a matter of law. So they're suggesting that the government needs to control these conspiracy theories because they've gotten out of hand. Now, throughout this paper, they'll bring up two specific conspiracy theories. They bring up several, but two specific ones they bring up repeatedly would be the JFK assassination, and they also bring up 9/11, because this was not long after 9/11. We're talking 8 years, and you know, people, it was still fresh during that time. You know, people were still questioning it. You know, it was. Things had grown, and I'll say just from my own personal place in life that I was on YouTube a lot, and I got a lot of different books that were written by people, David Icke, all these different people that talked about different conspiracies around the world, and I can say that they were really ramping up after 9/11. I mean, not that there weren't stuff before that, but I would say after 9/11, people were, it's like with any big thing that happens that shakes the foundation of a country or world, people start questioning things, rightfully so. If governments aren't being exactly truthful about it, that maybe we need to look into these a little bit more. I remember conspiracy theories being vastly different before 08, 09 than they are now. Even online, I get it. Social media wasn't what it was back in that stretch from 2001 all the way to 2008, 2009. But the access to the internet was still there. You still had YouTube, which was more of the wild, wild west back then. But you had these great documentaries that people were putting out there. And the thing that I noticed was a shift with certain conspiracies after this 08, 09, where certain theories became like the absolute truth in what was to become the truther community. You know, I remember before 08, 09, when we talked about the moon landings being fake, right? There were all these different documentaries out about it. Rarely anything about Flat Earth. I mean, listen, I know the Flat Earth Society came out long before that. And I'll talk about that briefly here, but we're not going to get much into Shape of the Earth stuff on this podcast. But I remember it was more about moon landings being fake. But I remember after 08, 09 into 2015, 16, all of a sudden this massive spike after 2012 and all these documentaries spawned out around that time, that if you thought the moon landings were fake, you automatically thought that the Earth was flat. And it's funny, if you do into FEers, flat earthers, if you suggested that the Earth wasn't flat, then they automatically thought that you thought the moon landings were real. It was so weird because it was never like that before. And I will say this, Shape the Earth outside of it, because I'm not talking about today and what I think about that, but you can think that the moon landings were faked back then and have a idea about the shape of the Earth that's not flat. Those two things don't correlate, by the way, at all. But this is just a prime example of after this 08, 09, a theory that became super entrenched. The Matrix theory got super entrenched. Mandela effect got super entrenched. And I'll talk about a little bit about these theories at the end of this. Again, not going deep into those because I'll do full podcasts about some of those theories in the future. But Cass Sunstein and Vermeule, they want to present the idea of what to do with people who have unjustifiable conspiracy theories. Now, in this paper, they talk about conspiracies. They say that conspiracies are real. They say in especially monarch-driven countries that it's right that the people should look into conspiracy theories because the governments are in control wholly. But he keeps talking about how in a free country like America that we should not be thinking that way because of the freedom of information would not allow for things to be manipulated, which I don't agree with at all. I think that the manipulation isn't... Okay, let's say it this way. say the moon landings are fake, right? People always say, well, how did thousands of people keep their mouth shut? It didn't work that way. You had a handful of people, probably count on one hand, that knew what was going on. Maybe some actors that weren't part of that whole sequence of when it went into space and all that stuff. And everything else was a trickle-down effect. What you saw on the radar was what they wanted you to see. So if a guy's sitting there in NASA and he's looking at a radar, he's only seeing what's being projected into the radar, right? They're only hearing what's coming through the radios. They don't know where it's exactly coming from. You can think that it's coming from a certain place, but you don't know. So that holds true with any conspiracy. And I'm not going to say conspiracy theory. I'll say conspiracy in this case, because if there's a real conspiracy, that's what would have to happen. It would be a trickle-down effect. It would be the pyramid. The eye of the pyramid would hold true in that model as well. You've got a very elite few bricks at the top, and they trickle everything down to it's less and less and less and less at the bottom. That's how it works. That's how conspiracies work. So I think it could very well work in a free society. I know people have a hard time with that. I don't think it's that hard of a stretch to get into. So he also talks about that their primary claim is that those who hold conspiracy theories of the succinctive sort typically do so as a result of mental illness of any kind or of simple irrationality, but as a result of a crippled epistemology in the form of a sharply limited number of informational sources. And if you don't know what epistemology is, it's the theory of knowledge, especially with regard to its methods, validity, and scope. Epistemology is the investigation of what distinguishes justified belief from opinion. So basically, he's saying that people that believe in conspiracy theories don't have mental illness. They don't have simple irrationality. They may be very intelligent individuals, but they just have a lack of epistemology, which is the lack of the investigation of what belief is from opinion. You see where he's going with this? He's skewing the lines between what critically thinking is. He's actually spinning it back. He's saying to be a critical thinker, you have to be able to push back from these conspiracy theories. Right? It's fascinating, man. It's so good. But he's not wrong in some cases, right? If we're going to say that the truther community is infiltrated and some of these things are false that are coming out, then that would hold true. That would mean that people didn't use critical thinking and they had a crippled epistemology and they held belief over opinion. And so he's not wrong in that aspect of that. But I will say that he is using this verbiage as a way to justify what they suggest later on at the end of this. And he even follows it up with some conspiracy theories have turned out to be true. And under our definition, they do not cease to be conspiracy theories for that reason. So the Watergate hotel room used by a Democratic National Committee was, in fact, bugged by Republican officials. We know that in the 1950s, the CIA did administer LSD and related drugs under Project MKUltra. In an effort to investigate the possibility of mind control, Operation Norwoods was a plan by the Department of Defense to simulate acts of terrorism and to blame them on Cuba, which they say didn't actually happen. I may get into Norwood at some point because there's some very interesting things that could show a different light on what Operation Norwood actually achieved. But he's showing you that some of these theories ended up being true. And he's saying that what happens is when these theories end up being true, it feeds all the other ones that aren't true. He's not wrong. There are some that aren't true. And the fact that you see things that are true, it feeds more and more and more. So he talks about the way that governments can dispel these conspiracies. He talks about that. He and Vermeule, the most direct government technique for dispelling false beliefs, providing credible public information is the way to do it in a straightforward way and say, this is the facts. These conspiracy theories are not. Now, he says that can backfire too, because when you start putting out information in a way that seems like you are attacking the conspiracy theory itself, it can work against you to where people are like, why are they talking about it? Why are they putting this in our lexicon if it's not true? And back to what I said before, in a closed society, secrets are far easier to keep, and a distrust of official accounts make a great deal of sense. So he does talk about in these closed societies, in these monarch societies where you have, you know, a ruling family or a ruling entity, and it's, you know, under an iron fist, that people have a right to believe in conspiracy theories, and they're probably not wrong with a lot of it. But again, he brings up 9/11. To think, for an example, that U.S. government officials destroyed the World Trade Center and then covered their tracks requires an ever-widening conspiracy theory in which the 9/11 Commission, congressional leaders, the FBI, and the media were either participants in or at best dupes of the conspiracy. Now, that's where I differ with him. This goes back to the pyramid structure, the trickle-down effect. The small, very few bricks at the top know the truth. They can trickle down what information they want to the next set of bricks, which trickle down what information they want to the next set of bricks, and it becomes very convoluted by the time it gets to the bottom. That's how these work. It's not that everybody in these organizations are a part of this. Matter of fact, there are good people that are part of the FBI, good people that are part of the CIA, good people that are part of the 9/11 Commission. There are good people in these organizations. Not everybody's evil. We got to get out of that way of thinking too. Good Lord, man. It's like everybody in Hollywood's evil. No. Impossible. Everybody in Hollywood's a reptilian. No. Impossible. Even if there is a possibility that there are reptilians in Hollywood, that just doesn't work that way. We have got to get out of this all or nothing mentality in this community, whatever it is. I don't consider it community. I think it's just people fighting each other all the time. We got to get out of this everything's fake mentality. That's how we think. And it really is a disservice to ourselves because, again, once everything becomes fake, once it all becomes a facade, then we don't know how to connect with anybody else because we look at everybody else's fake. We look at everybody else that we're the only real people walking the planet. When in actuality, we might actually be the fakest people on the planet. We got to start thinking that way. That's how you critically think. It's not looking at a meme. It's not looking at an article headline and taking it as truth. It's actually becoming a better person, not letting those things control you. Nothing wrong with looking into them. Nothing wrong with doing research. But we got to get out of this mentality of everything's fake or we'll never see the truth. And that's what they want. And I'm going through this paper right now to show you that that's what they've done. They've controlled this. And he does talk about this aspect of conspiracy theories, which I actually agree with. This is another thing I agree with that he talks about too. He says, conspiracy theories like rumors may simultaneously relieve a primary emotional urge and offer an explanation to those who accept the theory of why they feel like they do. The theory rationalizes while it relieves. Absolutely true. When something bad happens, what's the first thing that comes out, especially in the truth of community? All the conspiracies. We need an explanation for why we feel as bad as we do. Think about this. When we're not successful, what do? We point fingers at everything else. We actually don't look at what we did that we could have done better. We look at, well, there are algorithms in place. There's a government in place that's trying to stifle me. The best one to me is looking at, this is a good one, are conspiracy profiles on social media that don't do well. The first thing they'll say is what? The government's stopping me. They blocked my account a million times. What did you do to have that account blocked? And I don't mean talk about the government being bad. You probably used 10 million cuss words. You probably said a bunch of really ridiculous stuff. And you wondered why that you got blocked. Sometimes it's how you're doing it. It's not what you're doing it. And then you see people who are successful, who have a conspiracy page that does very well. You don't look at the hard work that they put into it, where they put an inordinate amount of time working on videos. It's well done, clean. It's original. It connects with people. And they also know how to use the verbiage that doesn't get flagged. People don't see that. They think that they're being stifled because of the government. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. That's the flip side of it, right? There are people that get shut down and silenced. I know it happens. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying it's not all of it. That's our biggest problem. We need these conspiracy theories to justify how bad we feel inside. We're not actually using these conspiracy theories to help us grow or look into the truth so we can help other people, are we? Are we just doing it so we can scream and yell because we don't like our lot in life? We don't like how we feel about our lives. We're not getting along with our wives or husbands, girlfriends, boyfriends, kids. So we want to use these conspiracy theories as a catalyst to get our anger out. I'm just speaking the facts, y'all. That's what I'm here to do. So they do get into the crippled epistemology again. We'll talk about that and how dangerous it can be. So that's very important too. The crippled epistemology can arise not only from informational and reputational dynamics within a given group, but also from self-selection of members into and out of groups with extreme views. We see that all the time. The echo chambers that are created in social media. These people think like me, so I'm going to go over here and scream and yell with them about what I believe, but never interact with anybody else that thinks differently than me. That happens with religion, happens with conspiracy theories, happens with sports, tribalism. And we're all susceptible to it, even myself. And I have to perpetually think through my emotions. You have to work through your emotional aspect because the emotional part of us is easy to manipulate. Once we get emotional, they're manipulating us. Once polarization occurs or cascades arise, we're talking about those cascades that I talked about earlier, and the group's median view begins to move in a certain direction, doubters and halfway believers will tend to depart while intense believers remain. We've seen that with theories all the time, where theories start not looking like truth. A certain group that came out around 2016 that perpetually said something was going to happen every 3 months that never happened. We know what that group is. Red hats. Well, at least the group wore the red hats. Not everybody that wears a red hat is part of the group. But Q. We see this happen with Q over the years, where it was always moving the goalpost of what was going to happen. And I absolutely think my belief, again, I'm always open to being wrong in the future, but my belief is that Q was created by the government. It was a part of this, what we're going to get into in a minute, cognitive infiltration, that is the answer to these conspiracy theories at the end of this paper. But yeah, it talks about group members may engage in a kind of doublethink, segregating themselves in a physical or informational sense in order to protect their beliefs from challenge by outsiders. We see this all the time. We see this all the time. We all do it. You do it. You have a conspiracy theory that you love or several. And as soon as it's challenged, what do? You run to your group and complain and scream and yell. You don't actually engage with somebody that thinks differently than you. You're not trying to connect with anybody. You need to hang out with your tribe. It's not how we were intended to live on this earth. And when we start looking at people as people and stop dehumanizing them because they're doing something we don't like, and I mean to the fullest. I mean when you see somebody out in public or wherever and they are completely opposite of you, on the spectrum, politically, spiritually, whatever else. How are you looking at them? Even if they're doing the worst things, how are you looking at them? Are you looking at them with some sort of grace and compassion that we're supposed to have for people? Or are you immediately looking at them with disgust and look at how you could tear them down? It's not right. It's not how we're supposed to be on this earth. As Christians, it's not. And you, and side note, Christians, you wonder why people want nothing to do with Christianity. It's because of how we act. It's because of how we act. We're not living Christ-like. You think Christ was turning away people that thought differently than him? Those are the people he went to talk to help. So now we're getting to the government responses. We're going to get to this last piece of what the answer is to this and what I think was the foundation for conspiracy theories. So he breaks down five different things that the government can do. The government might ban conspiracy theories. Government might impose some kind of tax, financial or otherwise, on those theories. Government might itself engage in counter speech to combat it. Government might formally hire credible private parties to engage in counter speech. And then lastly, the government might engage in informal communication with such parties, encouraging them to help, which is part of this policy called cognitive infiltration, which involves a mix of 3, 4, and 5. So we're going to dig into what these responses could do, and then, you know, what's the answer? What's his answer? What's Cass Sunstein and Vermeule's answer to the conspiracy theory problem, this misinformation, which they actually use this word in this paper, which was written at the end of 08 and was published in 09. So they ask, first dilemma is whether to ignore or rebuttal the theory. The second is whether to address the supply side of the conspiracy theorizing by attempting to de-bias or disable its purveyors. So basically, do they just ignore it and hope it goes away, or do they combat it? And there's pros and cons for both. So if you ignore it, then they're going to say, then the people that believe in the conspiracy theory will say, well, they're just trying to ignore it because they know that it's true and they don't have an answer for it, so it makes it more true. But on the flip side, if they try to combat it, then the conspiracy theorists will say, look, they're bringing it up. Why are they bringing it up and trying to say it's this if it's not true? So he's basically saying it's a lose-lose. It's a lose-lose. Now, he said it can work to certain people that are willing to listen, but he's also saying that it's definitely could be a lose-lose. So what's the real answer on being able to fight this? And he says it is a term called cognitive infiltration and persuasion. So one potentially promising tactic is cognitive infiltration of extremist groups. By this, we do not mean 1960-style infiltration with a view to surveillance and collecting information. However, that could be possible, infiltrating certain groups physically. What he really means is to infiltrate these groups, these networks, online. Now, they suggest that a role for government efforts and agents is introducing cognitive diversity. These agents might enter chat rooms, online social networks, or even real space groups and attempt to undermine percolating conspiracy theories by raising doubts with their factual premises, casual logic, or implications for action, political or otherwise. In one variant, government agents would openly proclaim or at least make no effort to conceal their institutional affiliations. A recent newspaper story recounts that Arabic-speaking Muslim officials from the State Department had participated in dialogues at radical Islamist chat rooms. So they were saying at the time, the way to combat the radical Muslims was to infiltrate and disseminate the group. Now, this is what they're saying is the first way. So you can infiltrate the group. You can tell them, break it down to them how it's not true. But that could also be met with resistance. They talk about that. Whereas you may figure out they're a government official. He even suggests that you might go into the group and say you're a government official and then break them down. He said it could work to some extent. Now, he brings up another one. Another possibility is that disclosure of the government's tactics will sow uncertainty and distrust within conspiratorial groups among their members. New recruits will be suspect, and participants in the group's virtual networks will doubt each other's bona fides. So what he's saying here in the second option, which I believe is what we're seeing now and what we've been seeing for the past 12 to 15 years, is when they infiltrate the group covertly, as a member of this echo chamber, they will disseminate the group by implementing conspiracies that aren't true at all. Or they'll take some truth, mix it with a bunch of lies to the point that no one knows what's the truth anymore. But then they're following these lies wholeheartedly. I honestly believe that some of these major conspiracy theories that have hit hard after this paper was written were concocted by government organizations, and people are following them as truth. I really do. And again, there could be some truth in them. You know, I always say about NASA that NASA is not all lies. They wouldn't be successful if they were. I think NASA is a mix of truth and lies. We don't know what the truth is, and we don't know where the lies end. We don't know. And it's easy to be, NASA's full of lies, they're stealing all our money. Yeah, in some ways, for sure. Maybe stealing money part. But that's not all lies. And we have to understand that. We got to live in this like medium ground where we understand there's this like fakeness that's perpetrated on us constantly, but there's also a real world and real people and real connections that are going on at the same time. We got to find a balance. We won't be able to combat the system otherwise. We have got two very intelligent individuals, Sunstein and Vermeule, who wrote this paper, which I think was the absolute basis for what the conspiracy community has become now, and they are telling you how to build a conspiracy community. He even says, whether the infiltration should occur in the real world, which I think happens too, through physical penetration of conspiracist groups by undercover agents, or instead should occur strictly in cyberspace, the latter is safer, but potentially less productive. So he says that, you know, meeting face-to-face is always better, but this was written, the end of 08, put out in 09. The internet wasn't quite what it is now. Social media wasn't where it is now. I think that if you talk to Sunstein now about how social media is being used, he would vastly change his perspective on those two options. So he ends it with, our goal has been to understand the sources of false and harmful conspiracy theories and to examine potential government responses. Most people lack direct or personal information about the explanations for terrible events, and they are often tempted to attribute such events to some nefarious actor, in part because they're outraged. Not wrong. We're always looking for a scapegoat for the bad things that happen. Now, are there plenty of times where we can point to those things and say, yeah, I think they did it? I think so. I don't think that's unfalse to be able to do that. And I think we have to have a critical mind to be able to look at it that way. But we can't also say that it's all controlled and fake. Some things are just the domino effect. Something happened here, which caused this to happen here, cause and effect. Sometimes that's manipulated, sometimes it's not. We got to start living in the real world, guys. And I mean it. I don't mean that we don't need to take on board critical thinking and look at the wild and the weird. Believe me, I've seen personally the wild and the weird. You know me. I'll go to the first nth of it. But I also believe we got to be centered and grounded. When we're not centered and grounded, these conspiracy theories rule our lives. And they become us to the point that I'm calling myself Matrix Thomas, because the Matrix theory is my theory and it is everything of my life. It's true. So they end it with, we have suggested, however, the government can minimize this effect by rebutting more rather than fewer theories, by enlisting independent groups to supply rebuttals, and by cognitive infiltration designed to break up the crippled epistemology of conspiracy-minded groups and informationally isolated social networks. So he, Cass Sunstein, and Vermeule broke down how to create a truther community, how to infiltrate people who critically think, to box them in, to infiltrate their echo chambers, make them more echoey. They set the blueprint. And we can look at theories that really hit their stride after this paper came out. Flat Earth? Yes, Flat Earth became massive after this paper. Listen, again, I was huge into conspiracies before 08, 09, and Flat Earth was just not in the mix, really. Anywhere I went, books I read, you could see it every now and then. It's more about the moon landings being fake. It was more about you know, what governments were doing. Shape of the Earth really didn't come up. After 08-09, just hit the absolute next level and get it. And listen, I know that the Flat Earth Society started in the 1980s. I'm not saying that this theory hasn't been around for a long time. And people that are effiers would definitely argue that it's always been that way. It hasn't. I would venture to say that this theory definitely has cognitive infiltration throughout. I am very open to the Earth not being what they're telling us, though. So let's be clear. I'm going to do a massive deep dive on what I think about the Earth down the road, but that's all I'm going to say right now. I'm very open to that fact, but we also have to be open to what we're reading, what we're seeing can also be controlled. If we're going to sit there and say that these things that are coming out in documentaries about the globe and what we've seen in textbooks are all fake, then what's this other information that we're getting? It's not censored, guys. No matter as much as people want to say that it is, it's not. I can go on YouTube right now and look at flat earth videos that have millions of views. Millions. And they're pro flat earth. It's not censored. It's not being quieted. It's being allowed to be out in the space. Now, could we argue that there are truths inside of this theory? I think so. And again, I'm more than willing to talk about that later on and what I think. I am a big proponent of the truth lies somewhere in the middle with most things. And I think that we have to start thinking that way, because once we get so stuck on one thing, we're done. We're cooked. Matrix theory, that's another one. I didn't really come around to the freaking Matrix movies. I mean, I know people want to argue. I know people want to argue that the Gnostics were the first ones to come up with this theory, and the Archons that live beyond this Matrix that have us trapped here, that once we get to a certain level of spirituality, we go past that. Okay, you're arguing something just like anybody else has a theory that this has been around for a long time. It's not in the same concept as what the Matrix theory is now. Not this, we're trapped in a simulation. And again, I'm open to whatever. I've looked high and low on simulation theory. My biggest problem with simulation theory is, and me having a belief in God, is that the simulation theory negates that. Unless you think that God created the simulation, that Earth is a simulation, it was always a simulation. But I don't know why he would lie to us, unless then at that point he's evil. So then we have to believe a whole different thing about God, which I'm sure there are some people that do, and I've heard them. That's my biggest problem with that. Mandela effect, another one that came after 2008 as well. 2010, Fiona Broom, paranormal researcher, remembered Nelson Mandela dying, and he actually died in 2013. So false memories was the first documented idea of the Mandela effect. The actual term Mandela effect came later in 2013, whenever she coined it, when she remembered Nelson Mandela dying in the 1980s, when he actually died in 2013. I think this is another one of those infiltrated things. If you actually want to look into the Mandela effect, there are several Mandela effects that aren't just like the cute ones, like Shazam and Luke, I'm Your Father, and the Cornucopia, Fruit of the Loom. There's other ones that hold a big significance, like the Bible's being changed by the Mandela effect, that God doesn't exist because of the Mandela effect, that there are all these things that become something else. And I think they drive us away from where we have hope into a state of perpetual fear and us being out of control. And I don't believe at all that we're out of control. I think we can go out of control. I think these theories can drive us to madness. And I think that's why that they have been infiltrated or created to do that for us. Nuclear bombs, that's another one. Not to say that the theory that nuclear bombs were fake or that the Trinity tests were fake, which I'm not going to argue if you think they're fake there. I've seen the videos. It's very similar to the moon landings to me. I'm very open to that idea. I just don't think that nuclear bombs is a whole or fake. I've done massive deep dives on that. I don't know if they're necessarily what they're telling us they are. And I may do a episode about that in some point in time. But yeah, nuclear bombs, another one that really hit the stride after 08. Not that it wasn't talked about before that, but another one that became a very deep-rooted, deep-seated conspiracy theory that if you question people about it and say that, well, I don't know if all that's right, they're immediately cutting you off. They immediately won't talk to you anymore. Do you know that people aren't friends with other people because of conspiracy theories? I've seen people get mad at each other over the shape of the earth. They won't even talk to each other over it. It's pure insanity. Pure insanity. We should never treat each other like that over a theory. Even if you believe it as a fact. And you may be right. But you cannot treat people with disrespect. Especially people that have done years and years of research. You may say that, well, they've done the wrong research. It doesn't discount the fact they've done it, that they have spent the time. And honestly, a lot of the people that hold true to some of these conspiracy theories that I think are flawed haven't really done that much research. Really haven't. They've seen a couple documentaries, read a couple books, and they think they're an astronomer. Yeah, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm going to shoot facts here because I think we have to get out of this state of madness. And this is coming from somebody who could have easily gone that route. Let those conspiracies control him to a point to where I don't want to connect with people anymore. I don't want to live life anymore to the fullest. And I don't think that's my lot in life. And I don't think that's your lot in life. I think we need to come together. We can share ideas, but at the end of the day, they're just theories, guys. Go outside. That's all I'm going to say. Go outside, touch grass. Literally. Do that. Well, guys, I had a blast today. I actually went a lot longer than I thought, but I had about 25 minutes of me just ranting at the beginning about what the podcast was. So I will take that one on the chin. I really appreciate you guys coming over here, checking me out. You can catch me here on Rumble if you're watching now, here on YouTube. However, there will be some episodes that will not make YouTube in the future. Just being honest with you, subject matter. Not to say that I'm going to be on here swearing and going crazy or anything like that. It won't be like that, but there will be subject matter where I'm going to want to talk about certain topics and I won't be able to on this platform, YouTube. So Rumble will always have video up and you'll be able to see and hear me talk. This will be mostly monologue style like today. It'll be a lot of my thoughts and my research. I will have guests on every once in a blue moon if I feel like it's going to bring something to the table or something new. I'm all about it. But you can catch me, like I said, here on Rumble, here on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Make sure you go to Apple Podcasts if you listen to it there. Give me a 5-star review. Write a nice review there too. It always helps with the algorithms. I told that to people before on some of my other podcasts I work on. It always helps. I'll be happy to read some of those on here too. I mean, you get out of pocket, I won't be reading those, but you know, there's always the people that don't like what you do. Probably somebody say they don't like the way I talk. So there's that. So I really appreciate you guys coming here for the very first episode of Free the Rabbits. And I'm telling you right now, I had a blast. And coming from a guy who a few months ago wasn't sure if I wanted to do this anymore, I really appreciate you guys coming over here. And I will be here every Friday, every week, dropping whatever hot lead I've got spewing out of the chamber for you guys to like or dislike. And we'll go from there. And hopefully we can all still be friends, even if we don't agree with each other. But again, I appreciate you guys so much. 5-star reviews on any platform you can do it on. Lots of comments on YouTube. Rumble, please, too. Share it. That's how we get the info out. Again, appreciate you guys. This is Joel Thomas. And as I like to say at the end of every one of these shows, go outside and touch grass and get your tail out the hole.
Thought my old motto was a VA. I was working 4 cylinders to death. Put it on me, no teammate. Dreams running on fumes, no rest. You could bargain for my soul for a mansion and a couple billboards, no less. Yeah, thank God for a couple roadblocks. much. I don't know if I'd stop where the road ends. Spent years looking for the real me, always came up missing. Yeah. Try to find it at the bottom of the bottle, and I promise ain't sipping. Yeah. Drowning in my vices, I thought I was flying. Yeah. Using darkness for my lighting, missing with the timing. Spent years looking for the real me, always came up missing. Yeah. Try to find it at the bottom of the bottle, and I promise ain't sipping. Spent so many years on the sidelines, trying to be the highlight, but under the bright lights, breaking all the guidelines. Yeah, missed the boat with no lifelines. Yeah, screaming, I don't need you. Fighting, but I'm free too. Neon lights make a path for my breath, like smoke in the cold every weekend. Spent years looking for the real me, always came up missing. Yeah, try to find it at the bottom of the bottle, and I promise ain't sipping.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.